All right, thanks for attending this afternoon's session. Good afternoon. My name is Will Brandt. I am the Senior Technical Lead on the Outlook Support Team at Microsoft in our Premier Group. I've been at Microsoft for about 6 years across several of our different support teams, including Word, PowerPoint, Visio Publisher, and now, of course, Outlook. I'm based out of the Fargo, North Dakota office. We have support teams spread out throughout the world, but in North America, we're primarily based across 4 different sites, including Fargo. My role as a technical lead, I'm essentially in a support role for our frontline support engineers, the people that take inbound phone calls and inbound support incidents that any of you could open up. I'm there when they run into problems, when they get stuck on a case. I'm one of the first people that they come to. So as far as what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about supporting Office. We're going to spend most of our time on Outlook. We'll cover general troubleshooting in Outlook, calendar, connectivity, and a tool called OCAT, the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool. We'll also do a little bit of troubleshooting in each of the apps, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. We'll do questions at the end. We have a lot of content, so I'd appreciate it. If you do have a question that comes up during the session, just jot it down and we can run through it at the end. All of this content is targeted at help desk people, IT admins. That's the kind of audience. If you're one of those people, you're in the right place. So let's get started. I'll start by talking a little bit about Outlook, so general troubleshooting. When I say general troubleshooting, what type of issues can you apply that to? Crashes, Outlook, you get the Outlook has stopped working dialog and Outlook closes. That's a classic crash. Hangs, white screens, Outlook is still running but is not responsive. Hangs mean a lot of things to a lot of different people, so if you're ever troubleshooting a hang, it's really important to, from a user perspective, to understand what does a hang mean to that user. Error messages, any type of error message that appears, or just unexpected behavior. I click this button and I expect this to happen. I expect new mail to come in, new mail's not coming in. They're kind of the general buckets as far as how we classify issues. So how do we approach those issues? A couple things that are really easy to do in Outlook, profile testing. First, test with a new profile. So in Outlook, we'll do a demo of this in a second, so if you haven't created a new Outlook profile before, you'll know how to by the end of the session. We store a lot of settings in the Outlook profile. It's not just your mail accounts, and there's a lot more there than that. So creating a new profile can rule out a lot of issues. It's best not to convert a profile, so we're going to talk about cache versus online. Don't flip one over, always create new. Next bullet here, cached versus online. If you're having a problem in cache mode, it's a good idea to test in online mode and vice versa. Reason being, we do a lot of things differently, especially when you talk about Outlook's connection to Exchange. Message submit, rendering of views, search are a few examples. Those things are all handled differently depending on whether you're using an online mode or a cache mode profile. So by switching that back and forth, you can help isolate the problem. If the problem reproduces in cache mode but does not reproduce in online mode, that generally points to some type of client issue because we're reading from the OST. We're doing a lot of the work that the server would be doing in online mode. Vice versa, if you have a problem in online mode that you do not have in cached mode, that typically points to some sort of issue with the mailbox. Not necessarily the server as a whole, but that user's mailbox. You can go a little bit further with this and try to create profiles on different machines to that user's, to the problem user's mailbox, or sign in with a different NT user account and create profiles to try and separate, is this a Windows profile problem, an Outlook profile problem, or an Exchange mailbox problem. Online mode profiles are really easy to create. Cache mode profiles, depending on the size of the mailbox, can take a little bit longer, so just keep that in mind. Next is add-in troubleshooting. Add-in troubleshooting isn't necessarily when you have a problem with a specific add-in and you want to go after that. When I talk about add-in troubleshooting, I'm applying that to all of those areas over on the left. Add-ins, by nature, alter Outlook's functionality. So they're extending Outlook, providing functionality that Outlook does not offer out of the box. Because of that, we're sometimes forced through different code paths, and that can cause some strange issues. So a couple different ways that you can test without add-ins. The first is in safe mode. Safe mode eliminates most add-ins in Outlook. It is still possible to write an add-in that that will load while Outlook is in safe mode. And when we get to the demo, we'll take a look at how to identify that something is still loading against Outlook even though you're running on safe mode. Safe mode carries a few other things with it. You don't have the reading pane. We don't load view toolbar customizations. So testing in safe mode for an extended period of time can sometimes be painful for users. It is a worthwhile test, however, especially if they have a problem that you've isolated as a client issue. Process Explorer is up there because that's a method that we use in Outlook support to identify which add-ins are loaded against the application. It's also the tool that we're going to use to identify if any add-ins are loading in safe mode. The tool that we're going to talk about a little bit later, OCAT, also will give you an inventory of add-ins that are loaded against Outlook, and we'll go into more depth on that when we get to it. Last is switches. So Outlook has a number of different switches. If you do a Bing search out on the web for Outlook version switches, you'll get an article that has a whole list of all of the switches that are available. They do differ across versions. There are some switches that are available in 2007 that are not in 2010. There are some in 2010 that are not in 2007, and so on and so forth. I have a couple common ones up here that we use. First is Safe, which we've already referenced. The next is Clean Views. What Clean Views does is it removes the view from the user's mailbox, any view customizations that user has. When you are in Outlook, the way that you have your reading pane set up, the way that you have your messages displayed, that's all stored on your Exchange mailbox. That can sometimes cause problems, or if a view becomes corrupt, it can sometimes cause problems like not being able to render specific views if you switch to a different folder and you don't see anything. We're basically looking at the unexpected behavior section of this slide. So Clean Views is a good one to try, especially if you've done some profile testing and you've determined that, hey, this issue seems to follow my user from machine to machine across every single profile. You know it's a mailbox problem. Clean Views is an easy one to try. Always good to set your user's expectation that when you run Clean Views, it's going to reset them back to the default view that they got with out-of-the-box Exchange Outlook. So there's some momentary pain there, but is typically quickly resolved. Clean Reminders, also have that up on the slide. That is useful if you have a reminder that just won't go away. I keep dismissing this reminder over and over again, and it just keeps popping back up. Try Clean Reminders. Can be useful. So with that, let's move on to a demo. Take a quick look at Profile. All right, so here we have a Outlook profile. This is running in online mode. You can tell that because of the bottom corner or the status bar here where it says online with Microsoft Exchange. It's a giveaway right away that this is an online mode profile. If it's a cached mode profile, it will say connected to Microsoft Exchange there. So we're going to quit out of Outlook and create new profiles. We're going to do Control Panel. And then into Mail. And from here, we can get a list of all the profiles that are available on the system. From here, we can add our new profile. So if we want to create our new cached, we go through our auto-discover process just like we would with a brand new profile. And from here, if we click Finish here, we're going to get a cached mode profile. That's the default of Outlook. If I click this manually configure server settings at the bottom and click next, from here I have some additional information. So I can clear the box to use cached mode if I already had a existing online mode profile, or if I already had an existing cached mode profile and wanted to test this in online mode, I want to clear that checkbox. And depending, if we want to go into more settings, there's also some additional advanced settings available, which we won't talk about today. But I'll just go ahead and click Finish. And now I have my new profile. To switch between them, I have a couple of different options. I can set it here to say which one I want to use, or I can choose to be prompted. If you feel like you're going to have to do a lot of testing, sometimes it's nice to be prompted so that you don't have to keep coming back into the mail applet. So that's handy. So that's our new profile. Next time we start Outlook, I'm going to change. I changed it to prompt. You can also, if you're prompting, you can also create a new profile from here. And there we have a brand new profile. We're going to pull down a new copy of the mailbox. I have a very small mailbox. Also, a very very fast Ethernet connection between these two machines. So this is very quick. But keep that in mind in your environment. So next is add-in troubleshooting. We have Outlook loaded. So to start to do most of our add-in troubleshooting, we can do one of two things. We can start in safe mode, like we talked about. Next thing we can do is go into the options and add-ins. And from here, I can manage manage any COM add-ins that are loaded against Outlook. You can see there are several that are loaded right now, a couple that are not. I can go through and clear all these checkboxes, and that, in theory, should stop add-ins from loading against Outlook. However, that's not always the case. It is still possible to load an add-in, even if you clear it here, or if you launch in safe mode. Antivirus add-ins are notorious for doing that. They are, you know, for good reason, hard to kill. So a tool that we can use to detect add-ins that are running even though we don't expect them to is Process Explorer. So Process Explorer is a sysinternals tool. Launching here. And we can use this to identify any modules that are loading against Outlook. So if we select Outlook in the Process pane, then go to View, Lower Pane View, and select DLLs. Down here, we'll see all of the different DLLs that Outlook is currently holding on to or are attached to the Outlook process. How we typically approach this for identifying add-ins is sort by company name, find anything that's not Microsoft, identify the DLL, then find out what we need to do to remove it. So is it something that we have to uninstall? Can we rename the DLL? Renaming DLLs can sometimes destabilize applications, so uninstalling is typically our recommendation. And this is often something that you're just doing for testing to figure out, you know, is this contributing to the problem or not. All right, so next topic that we're going to cover as far as Outlook goes is calendar. Calendar is our most common type of issue in support. And when I say calendar issues, I'm talking about missing meetings, duplicate meetings, meetings where the time changes, attendees becoming organizers of meetings. So as IT admins and help desk professionals, anybody had a calendar issue before, had a meeting drop off a calendar? Yeah. So calendar has become more and more of a complex task because of all the different things that are involved in it. You're not typically just looking at your Exchange calendar with Outlook. You're looking at it with devices. You're looking at it using OWA. There's a number of integration pieces there. So what can you do to help prevent some of those things? We have some best practices. First, mobile devices. So mobile devices are a very common cause of missing duplicate time change meetings. Even if you're not necessarily interacting or editing an item, accepting an item, declining an item, from your device is still processing that item, and it's still copying properties, in some cases recreating, deleting and recreating the meeting on your calendar. When that process works as the vendor designed it, or as we intended it to as Microsoft, then there's no issues. But it's when that process breaks down that you have problems. So what can you do? First, keep Exchange updated. With Exchange updates, roll-ups, service packs, we're constantly trying to make ActiveSync better so that you don't have these type of problems. So if you can stay on top of ActiveSync updates or Exchange updates, that will help with a number of device issues. The next is on the device side. Keep your devices updated. If you have iPads, iPhones, make sure you're on the most recent version of iOS. If you have Windows phones, make sure that you're on the most recent version of Windows phones. Whatever your users are using to access Exchange, make sure that it is as up-to-date as possible. We also this article is also in the references section, but we maintain a list of current issues with ActiveSync and third-party devices. We spend, as our most common issue in support, we spend a significant amount of time on this, and we try to do a pretty good job of documenting things that apply to both our products and things that we know about with other products. End dates for recurring meetings. This is also a common cause of a missing meeting specifically. If you have recurring meetings that have no end dates, what happens when you create an exception to a meeting is we actually create an attachment to the meeting item that's on your calendar. So the recurring meeting is a single instance on your calendar until you create a exception. As soon as you create an exception, you create an attachment. Meetings with no end date tend to get a lot of attachments. So when some device, Outlook, ActiveSync device, whatever, has to render that item, has to render the initial item, and then go through and render each one of those exceptions. That can sometimes cause some problems, whether it's with the device rendering the item or it's with the device writing all those exceptions back. So when thinking about end dates, you have to kind of think about how many times is this meeting going to get modified? If I have a recurring meeting on my calendar for somebody's birthday, I could probably do no end date. That's not going to change. If I have a recurring meeting on my calendar for a weekly meeting that's going to, every time that we get done with the meeting, somebody's going to send out updates as part of that meeting, that's creating an exception. Maybe I want to think about a year for that. If I have a daily meeting, maybe a month. So think about how often you're modifying that and try to pick an end date from there. Delegates are the next pain point. So with delegates, it's not necessarily always a software problem. It's sometimes just a communication problem. Communication between delegates is really important. Who's going to act on items as they come in? Is the primary delegate going to accept everything? Is the manager going to be accepting everything? It's important to look at that and make a decision based on and stick to it. If you have multiple delegates, so let me give you an example. If a meeting is put in a tentative state in Exchange 2007 or 2010 by the calendar attendant, a meeting comes in, Exchange processes it, puts it on tentative state on the calendar. If Delegate A doesn't process the item, Delegate B deletes the meeting request because they're the person that doesn't ever process items, that meeting will now drop off the calendar. If you delete a meeting request for a tentative item, it will remove itself from its calendar. And that's a design behavior. So that's why limit the total number of delegates, kind of leading into the next bullet point. How many people do we really need to be receiving meeting invites for a given manager user? We recommend at most 4. So I've seen upwards of 15, but our recommendation is at most 4, ideally only 1 with editor access to the calendar to solve that communication problem. Versions of the Outlook client also have that listed here. If you have manager delegate users, always try to make sure that they're on the same version of the Outlook client. So if you're doing a migration, it's great if you can get them, for example, if we're going from 2007 to 2010, it's great if you can get them to move at the same time. If not, at least have them on Outlook 2007 SP2 or higher. We would love to see them fully up to date. But so what can you do to proactively identify some of the problems, these type of problems that we just talked about? Right now, if you're having users report missing meetings, they're probably reporting it to you because they missed a meeting. And they're probably not terribly happy about missing that meeting. So we have a tool called CalCheck. CalCheck's available out on calcheck.codeplex.com. This is a tool that was written by one of our Outlook's engineers. He's one of our escalation folks. What it does is it opens up the default calendar for a given profile. That is controllable via a switch. So if you want to open a different profile, you can use a command line switch to open a different one, and it will start checking for known problems. Now, if a meeting's completely gone from a calendar, we're probably not going to find it, but if there's some known problem with a meeting, so some type of corruption that we know about, permission problems, missing organizer email, missing certain properties. The example I have up here is the DISBID recurring property. That property's missing. The meeting will still be on the calendar, but it won't show in your calendar view. You'd have to go into list view to find it. So CalCheck is a tool that will help you identify that without having to click through the calendar and do an audit yourself. CalCheck has a number of different switches. The dash A switch is great for identifying recurring meetings without an end date. That will output all calendar items to a CSV file. The dash S switch will allow you to process an entire server. So if you want to run CalCheck against everybody on a given server, you can do so using the S switch. Along with the S switch or without it, the dash R switch will put a report message. So it'll drop the log file from CalCheck into the user's inbox so that they are aware of any calendar items that might have some issues. And then question mark for help. So let's take a quick look at CalCheck. Just want to quickly show the CalCheck help. There's some examples there. So if you try this after the session, there's some good reference material there of some different commands that you might want to try and use to run this this tool. It lists all of the profile or all of the switches here. It's a good reference. So let's run it. I'm going to run it without any switches. When I run it without any switches, I'm prompted for a profile. I need to select the profile with the mailbox that I want to run this against. I'm going to use my online mode profile. And it runs. I have a very small mailbox here, so it doesn't take very long. There's only three items on the calendar. So let's go over to the folder. And what happens after you run it is it generates this calcheck.log file. Let's open that up. And here it's giving a report of the mailbox that it was run against, tells us what time it ran. I have some connectivity issues for my address book. It tells me what time zone it was run against, and then found four items on the calendar, and it did not find any issues with any of those items. If you did find issues, those would be noted below, and it will give you a short description of the problem that it found. So we'll summarize, for example, DISBID recurring. It'll say DISBID recurring property is missing. This item may not be showing in day, week, month view, for example. So I also mentioned running it with the dash R switch, or the dash A switch, excuse me, for that CSV file. So let's do that quickly. And it generates a calcheck.csv file here. And I have a listing of all the meetings that are on this user's calendar. I have a little bit of information about each one of those meetings. It'll tell me if it's a recurring meeting or not, who the organizer is, organizer's address. And here we have, as mentioned earlier, it's a good way to identify recurring meetings that don't have an end date. I have a recurring meeting that has a recurring meeting says true here for recurring, and then under end date I have no end date. So that's a signal to me as an Exchange admin, as a help desk person. Maybe I want to talk to this user and say if they've had calendar problems in the past and say, hey, maybe you want to think about putting end dates on your recurring meetings. Next thing we're going to talk about in relation to Outlook is connectivity. So connectivity, in addition to just being generally connected to Exchange, I want to highlight a few things. First is auto-discover. So auto-discover, if you're Exchange 2007 or higher, you're familiar with this. One of the big incentives for auto-discover is it configures your mailbox for you. You don't need to enter server names. It's a lot more than that, however. If auto-discover's not working correctly, availability won't work right. So if you try to get pre-busy information for others when you're trying to schedule a meeting with them, if you click over to that scheduling tab, if availability service isn't present or auto-discover is returning incorrect information, that won't work for users. Out-of-office, also provided through auto-discover. Without correct auto-discover information, we cannot give you the ability to set your out-of-office reply. Your offline address book, also driven through auto-discover. Auto-mapped mailboxes in Exchange 2010, so archive mailboxes, automatically mapping mailboxes that you have full permission to is all done through auto-discover. Auto-discover doesn't work, you will not see your archive mailbox. There's also a tool, so we'll look at how to test auto-discover, how to see what response you're getting back in just a moment. We'll also take a look at another tool called the Connection Status Dialog. Connection Status Dialog will give you a summary of all the active connections to Exchange, GCs, and public folders. So you'll see a quick summary of that. You'll get some real-time response statistics, and we'll look at it in just a moment. The other item that's listed here is the Remote Connectivity Analyzer. Remote Connectivity Analyzer is useful for testing ActiveSync devices, if you have Outlook Anywhere clients. So the classic scenario for this is I have a bunch of field users or people that work from home. They connect fine when they're in the office, but when they go home, they can't connect through Outlook Anywhere. If they VPN in, they're okay. What the Remote Connectivity Analyzer does is it simulates somebody connecting from an Outlook client outside of your network and tries to give you some information as to why that connection isn't working. Is it proxy related? Is it related to the firewall? Is there some other kind of issue going on? So it's a useful tool. Just talked about it in the context of Outlook Anywhere, but it is also possible to test ActiveSync, Exchange Web Services, and SMTP using this tool. So very useful. So let's take a look at auto-discover and the connection status window. So to access auto-discover, or test email auto-config, which is what we're going to use to test auto-discover, I need to right-click on the Outlook icon. You'll notice I just right-click normal. I don't see any of these tools. If you hold down control and right-click, you get two additional items. The first one we're going to talk about is test email auto configuration. At the top of test email auto configuration, we have the email address that we're going to use. This is the address for the currently logged on user. We typically clear the guest smart and secure guest smart authentication checkboxes because we don't need to run those tests to test auto discover. From here, let's go ahead and click test, and we get a bunch of results back. So this is what it should look like. You'll notice that I have my availability service URL has been returned. If that were missing, that would indicate a problem with the ability to look others' free busy information up. My out-of-office URL, OAB URL, all of those things are available through AutoDiscover. There's some additional information. If you look on the log, you can see exactly where we looked it up through. We found this URL through SCP, so it wasn't a guess. It was the AD entry for it. And you can also look at the raw XML that's being returned. Next tool is that connection status window. So again, hold control, right-click on Outlook. Well, holding the Windows key will not do it. Go to connection status, and here I can see all of the active connections that my Outlook client has open right now. I see I have two mail connections open, and I also have two directory connections open. The Exchange server that I have in this test environment happens to be both a GC and a mail server, so I'm connected to both of them. We have some statistics. You can see that the status of the connection. One place where this is useful is troubleshooting authentication prompts. If you're not sure where that authentication prompt is coming up, if you bring up the connection status issue when the prompt appears, take a screenshot of this dialog, authenticate, then take another screenshot. That'll generally give you some idea of where that authentication prompt is coming from and give you an idea of where you need to start troubleshooting. We have average response. That's our RPC response time. Last thing that I want to point out here is version. For mail server connections, we have the version listed. This is useful if you're in a transition environment and you're thinking, I can't remember where this guy's mailbox is. Is it on our 2007 server? Is it on our 2010 server? If you look here, this will tell you for sure. 8 is Exchange 2007. 14 is Exchange 2010. The second number, so 14 dot, that's the service pack level. So this is Exchange 2010 RTM. Dot 1 or dot 2 would be SP1 and SP2 respectively. Works the same for 2007. And I'm sure that nobody is running Exchange 2003, but if you were, you would see Exchange 6 in this dialog. You can also kick off a reconnect from here if you think that there's some kind of weird connection problem. You click reconnect and it will reestablish all of these. Last tool that we're going to talk about for Outlook is OCAT. OCAT is fairly new. It's the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool. When we're talking about this during today's session, we're going to talk about version 2 of the tool, which is releasing very, very soon. Version 1 is what's currently posted as of yesterday afternoon, but V2 will be released very soon. What the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool does is provides a detailed report of the current Outlook profile. So it's really useful for data collection. This is a component of tools that we use internally within Microsoft to collect data when you call for a support ticket. So you can automate a lot of manual process. We'll also highlight any known problems that we find with the profile. So if there's something that we're aware of, whether it's through support incidents or our own testing, we have the ability to create what's called a rule with OCAT and push that out through updates. So V2, one of the big things of V2, is that it will automatically check for new rules. Right now we're processing close to 100 different rules to help identify any problems that might be occurring with with that given machine. OCAT also runs the CalCheck tool that we talked about a little bit earlier. So in addition to running just a scan of the client itself, you're also getting CalCheck, checking the calendar. And as I mentioned, this is really useful for data collection by help desk personnel, especially if you want to collect a bunch of data, export that scan out, and have that available for later research. This can help you do that. The OCAT team maintains a Twitter account. If you're looking for updates on releases, new features, follow OCAT on Twitter. And that's where you'll get the most up-to-date information. So with that, let's take a quick look. So that's a already run scan. I'm going to start up OCAT, and the first thing that happens is we're going to check for updates. I already have the updates that downloaded, so I'm going to cancel that check. And from the selection screen, we have a few different options. We can select options for a new scan. We can select a configuration scan to view. So if we have an exported scan from a previous run of this tool, that's what we'd want to use to view it. And there's also a link here to the Exchange Remote Connectivity Analyzer. So let's the link to that from my main machine. We'll look at that briefly as well before we move on to other products. So select options for a new scan. I can enter the scan label. Just call this. And I have the ability to run a full scan, which scans my Exchange mailbox, or an offline scan, which does not take into account any of the online stuff. If I need to use different credentials to authenticate to my Outlook profile, I have some options here to enter those. And we'll go ahead and start the scan. It can take a while to run. It should be fairly quick here. If it doesn't run in just a moment, we'll flip over to the scan, which I already have run. And there we've completed our 19 different items. So earlier in the presentation, we were talking about add-ins and third-party modules. OCAT is one way to identify those. We have some Exchange items, calendaring, number of different categories, all the way down to OS details and system information. So let's flip over to our report. When we view our report, OCAT's going to execute those rules. What I'm looking at here is a high-level review, all the informational items that were found. If I just want to view the issues, I switch over to all issues. It will show me any problems that it found with the profile that we ran this against. So in this case, I found a potential issue with mail merge. I have an out-of-date WWLib version. I'm also a little bit behind on my updates on this machine. So this will identify those problems for me. So why do we care about Word and WWLib in Outlook? With Outlook 2010 and 2007, Word is our editor. So if you have editor problems, the version of Word that's installed on the system, or at the very least, the version of WWLib that's installed can contribute to those problems. I want to drill into this a little bit more. If I switch over to tree reports up at the top, I can drill through the data that was collected. So I have a lot of information about the OS, the computer itself. This is Windows 7 Ultimate. I have the build number for it. So you've automated a ton of data collection, 32-bit. It's an English operating system. That's what 1033 stands for. So I've collected a lot of data in a very short amount of time, something that probably would have taken hours to collect before. Also have information about the default Outlook profile. Oh, I have two profiles on this system. Tells me what accounts are in each of the profiles, etc. So I won't drill through the entire thing, but there's a lot of data here, and it can very quickly find problems that you may have otherwise had to spend an hour or two digging and trying to get to the bottom of. So that's OCAT. There's a link to download OCAT in the references section if you pull down the deck. If you go to that Twitter page, there should be a link to download it from there as well. And watch for V2. V1's pretty cool as well. Lacks CalCheck and the automatic updating functionality, but still very useful. So before we go on to that, realized I did not bring this tool up here. So this is the remote connectivity analyzer. From here, I mentioned we can test ActiveSync, Exchange Web Services. Exchange Web Services is a component that Outlook 2007 and 2010 rely on for a number of different tasks. It is also the protocol that is used by other mail clients, including Entourage and Mac Outlook. So if you have problems with either of those clients, running these EWS tests can help. Outlook connectivity tests will test Outlook Anywhere, otherwise known as RPC over HTTP. We have ActiveSync, AutoDiscover, and then SMTP, as I mentioned. All right, so with that, we'll move on to Word. So within Word, number of different issues that can occur, much like Outlook, kind of bucketed them into a few different areas. First is print issues. Nothing prints on a document. It doesn't print out the way that you expect it to. Layout is wrong, either on print or on screen. Styles aren't applying the way that you expect them to, along with that, formatting issues. And the last, unable to open a document. So how can we recover text from a file? How can I get a document that's broken to open? So first, let's talk a little bit about templates. Word has a dependency on templates. Every document has a template attached to it, whether you know it or not. Most likely, that template is normal.dotm. That is the template that attaches is the default Word template that's on the system. Templates are important for a few reasons. They drive styles, formatting, default options in Word 2010 or in 2000. Word 2010, they drive quick parts. So there's a whole bunch of functionality that's based off of templates. We'll look at one thing that you can do with normal, especially if you're getting weird formatting with new documents, is create a new copy of it. If we delete off the normal.dotm file, the next time Word closes, we'll write back a brand new, fresh copy of it. If you have documents that are really slow to open, sometimes that can be driven by a template that's either inaccessible or is stored on a really slow network share. So we'll also look at a way to identify which templates are attached to a given document and troubleshoot with that. Print drivers are also very important for Word functionality. Print drivers are a whole lot more than just printing. We use print drivers to do layout and routing on the page. So print drivers can also cause slow on open behaviors in Word, or they can cause items on the page to be laid out differently depending on what print driver you have selected. So a good test is to go with something that's fairly benign, like a PDF print driver or the XPS driver. Set that as the default, launch Word, and see if you get different behavior. Add-ins, like Outlook, add-ins by nature alter the way that Word works, is useful to test without them. You can apply the same concepts that we talked about with Outlook, using Safe Mode, use Process Explorer, and test without those things to see if you can reproduce the issue. And we'll also talk about how to recover text from corrupt documents. We'll look at that in the demo. There's a few different methodologies that you can use. So let's move over to our demo here. All right. So first, let's take a look at the templates that are attached to a given document. So I'm going to open up this sample document that I have in my demo folder here. I'm going to enable editing. So this document, there are no problems per se with this document. To identify which templates are attached to it, I can do a couple different things. The first is over in the info pane. If I click the file tab in Word 2010 and click show all properties, I'm not able to, oh, there it is, template. Normal is attached. So if there was another template attached, you would see that here. Don't have a lot of ability to control it here, but you can at least view it. If I go into options and then to add-ins, down here at the bottom, if I click manage, I can get to templates. And this will tell me what the attached document template for this particular document is. I can attach a different template, so if this is a template that's stored out on the network that's inaccessible or some template that's no longer there, I can attach it back to normal or some local copy of that same template to try and alleviate slow open problems or formatting problems. I can also see any global templates or add-in templates that are added are loaded and either add or remove those from this dialog. The same dialog is accessible from the developer tab of the ribbon, so if you find that this is something that you're commonly doing, you can add it there, and you can also add it to your quick access toolbar. So recovering text from corrupt documents was the other thing that I had mentioned. So when I have a document that's broken, what are some things I can do to try and fix it? The first and easiest is to copy the entire document except for the last paragraph mark. So I turned on the show hide formatting characters, and what I'm going to do is just do a control shift end and select my entire document and just back off one line and leave off that last paragraph mark. Why do we leave off the last paragraph mark? Because there's the formatting is for the previous paragraph is contained within that paragraph mark. Oftentimes, when documents become corrupt, we see that corruption stored in the last paragraph mark. So copying this over to a new document, resaving it, and testing to see if I still see strange behavior is a useful troubleshooting step. The other thing I can do, assuming that I can get the document open, is I can save it out as RTF. This process is called round-tripping. So if I do a save as, and from here, I'll save out as rich text format, then reopen that up in Word and save it back as a docx. The reason that we're using RTF is RTF pushes the document through a converter, and that sometimes will cause us to drop corruption that's in the document. So a useful troubleshooting step, you can sometimes lose some formatting because rich text doesn't have all the capability that docx and DOC do. But if you have a busted document, oftentimes you'd rather have a working document than a really pretty busted one. So worth a try for sure. Word also has a feature called recover text from any file. So if I do an open, from here we have recover text from any file. If you have a document that will not open, you can choose this option and then choose the file that will not open and try to open it that way. This can get pretty ugly, but again, if you have a busted document and you're just trying to get text out of it, this sometimes is not that bad of an option. We also have an open and repair feature. So Word does a pretty good job of trying to repair documents when you open them, but if you want to explicitly kick off a repair, for example, if I suspected that my sample was corrupted, I could click this drop-down and choose to open and repair that particular document in the hopes that it would repair the problem that was occurring. The last thing that we can try and do is if the document is saved in the new file format, in the OpenXML format, is to try and recover the text from the XML. So I'm going to click the Organize drop-down here. I need to show the file extensions. So I'm going to clear the checkbox for hide extensions for known file types. And I'm going to copy this. Always create a copy. the mantra of Microsoft support, always create a copy and never delete anything, always rename. So we're going to rename this to a zip. All of the new, and you can do this with any one of the new file formats, PPTX, DocX, and XLSX. The Excel one is not as straightforward because they do this thing called shared strings. But for PowerPoint, which we'll also look at an example of in Word, it's fairly manageable. So within the zip container, which is all the docx really is, it's a zip container of a bunch of XML and all the elements that are in the document, we can drill through that and try to recover our text. So within Word, our text is stored in this XML file, this document.xml. And if you look through here, here's my paragraph. So now I can pull text out of this file, even though it won't open in Word. The OpenXML file formats do tend to be really stable. This benefit aside, they're very stable on their own. But if you do ever get into a disaster recovery scenario, having it in the newest version of the file format gives you some additional options that you wouldn't have had with a binary file format. You can also drill through these folders. I had an Excel chart embedded in there, so here we can see the item that's embedded within the document. I would be able to pull that out if I needed to recover it. Any images that are stored within that document. So there's a ton of flexibility with the open XML model. If your document is saved with a password, all of this is encrypted. So in that case, this wouldn't work. But it's available for most documents. So move on to Excel. Excel, first thing we're going to talk about is save issues. So Excel has a fairly unique way of saving files. If you have save issues, it's helpful to understand how Excel saves files to troubleshoot those items. So when you open and save an Excel file, we do four things. First, we need to have read permission to open the file to be able to read in the data. We also need to have write permission, because when you open a file, we create a temp file alongside that file to write all the changes that you're making to it. If you choose to save the file, what we do is we delete the original file and we rename that temp file to the name of the original file. So if you don't have one of those permission items, or if that breaks down, that process breaks down at some point, you can end up with the inability to save files. You can end up with temp files that build up on a particular folder, such as a network share. So all those permissions are necessary. Some special provisions for network. One thing to keep in mind with network, when you're working with Office documents, whether it's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, over a network, you're generally generating about 2.5 times the traffic as you would in accordance with the file size. So if I have a 1 meg Excel file, I could be generating up to 2.5 megs worth of traffic as I work with that file. So if I have a file on the network, what are some things I can do to troubleshoot? First is, you know, copy it local. That'll tell you, is it a network problem? Is it a problem with that specific file share? I don't have the right permissions, so on and so forth. Also, working with network files, be aware of antivirus software, backup software, anything terminal and stay resident What tends to happen sometimes is during this this whole process, we'll pick on antivirus here. So we read this file in, we write a temp file out, antivirus says, oh, new file, I'm going to go grab it and lock it. Now antivirus is scanning that file, has a lock on that file, and Excel can't access it anymore, so the process breaks down. So that sort of thing is important to be aware of. If you're troubleshooting a network issue, what type of software is running on that server? Does it have instant backup software or anything along those lines? As far as issues in Excel, outside of save issues, there's a couple other areas. File-specific issues, so formulas that don't calculate properly, erratic behavior, crashes with specific sheets or worksheets, are all different areas that can be affected. You can also see performance. One common trigger for performance issues is formulas and macros that reference entire columns. This is especially true for people that are moving from 2003 to 2007 or 2010. The reason for that is that in 2003, you had 65,000 rows. And if I said sum C colon C, I am summing 65,000 rows. If I move to 2007 or 2010, with that same formula, I am now calculating 1 million rows. So as you start to do calculations across several columns, that starts to compound itself and can put a lot of unnecessary load on the machine, especially if the user isn't intending to calculate that much data. An abundance of objects can also cause performance issues with a sheet. So styles, shapes. Typically, the way that happens is users working with an Excel sheet and they're copying and pasting data either from external sources or within the sheet. Every time they do that, all the objects that they have selected get duplicated over and over again. Now, when you try to move throughout the sheet, Excel needs to render those items and can sometimes cause some issues. So what are some things that you can do? First, round tripping. So we talked about this with Word. What do you want to use with Excel? So if you have it saved in XLSX, you may want to try going through XLSB or XLS back to the original format. You can also approach it by troubleshooting the common problem areas themselves. So shapes, styles, defined names can cause problems with calculations, or try Excel in a new shell. What Excel in a new shell means is let's copy the contents of the workbook into a new workbook. There can sometimes be corruption that's stored in the workbook itself. Moving the data over to a new workbook can resolve that. An easy way to do that is to open multiple instances of Excel. So we'll take a quick look at that as well. You can have an instance of Excel running on one, if you have two monitors, you can have it running on one monitor and have the original workbook open on the other monitor just by launching Excel twice. Makes it very easy to copy back and forth. You can actually do that with Word and PowerPoint as well in 2010. So let's flip over to our demo. And I have a broken file here. You'll notice that when I try to open this file, it's going to take a few seconds to open. It's not too bad. This machine has 4 gigs of RAM, this VM, and there's really nothing else going on this machine, but still took a couple seconds to open. As I try to scroll through the file and click through it, it's a bit slow. It may be harder for you to tell from the audience because you're not clicking, but trust me, it is. So what are some different things that we can do to address that? Well, the problem with this particular sheet is all the shapes that are in the background. So I don't see any shapes on this sheet, but there's a quick way to get rid of all of them. So if I click Find and Select, and then use the command Go to Special, and choose Objects, this will select all of the objects that are on this particular sheet. I'm going to click OK. Hope for the best. This workbook's really unstable. So what we'll see happen in just a moment is you'll see selections all across the worksheet. And those are actually what's causing the slowness in this particular workbook. Notice that Excel is not... Oh, there we go. So we have all of our shapes selected. This is data that was most likely copied from another source or copied over and over again within the sheet. This is most likely not the intention of the user to have the sheets or to have this many shapes in the sheet. So we can delete those off, and that'll improve our performance for this particular sheet. And I'm actually going to kill Excel because this does cause considerable performance issues. Well, I didn't have to kill it. The other thing that I mentioned is defined names. So defined names can cause calculation problems. They can also cause slow open if they're referencing other workbooks. So from the formulas tab, if we open up the name manager, here we can see all of the defined names that are listed in this workbook. So there's a lot of them. You see a lot of pound refs in here. So a lot of defined names that are not in use. So I'm going to go ahead and close that. From the name manager, you can use the name manager to go through and clean up those defined names. I've already done that in the interest of time here. So let's open up our... I'll close out of Excel. So here's the fixed version of this sheet. Very quick to open. So that's the difference. Again, it's hard to point out the improvement in performance just clicking through the sheet, but it's very fast and very responsive. And this is exactly the same workbook without the defined names and without the shapes in it. And then the last thing I mentioned, Excel in a new shell. One way that we might do that, if you right-click on Excel here, choose Microsoft Excel 2010. Now we have two instances of Excel running. I can run these side by side with Snap and just start copying data over to this new shell and see if I see performance improvements or behavior improvements in that new shell. So very quick, very easy way to do that. Last product we're going to cover today is PowerPoint. Troubleshooting in PowerPoint falls into a few different areas. The first area you can focus on is slide masters. Slide masters, for those of you that aren't aware of them, are working behind the scenes to control all the available layouts and formatting for any given slide. So when you click the new slide dropdown, what you're getting is a list of all the different content masters that are available within that slide. If you have some corrupt masters or some unexpected masters, they can cause some weird formatting to be applied to your slides. Can also really clutter up the new slide dropdown. We'll take a look at slide masters in just a moment. Recovering corrupt slides, a few different practices you can use here. Insert slides from file, we'll look at in the demo. You can also use a technique called divide and conquer. If you have a problem with the presentation and you can get the presentation open, we typically use this method in support. And what we do, delete half the slides in the presentation, save it with a new name. Does it still have the problem? Okay. If it doesn't, we know that the problem was in one of the slides that was deleted prior. And we just continue to delete half until we narrow ourselves down to the problem slide. Once you get down to the problem slide, you can continue to utilize this technique. Oftentimes, we can get down to a problem graphic. It's a picture on a slide or a logo, a particular drawing object. So very effective. Very simple, but very effective. Last, for recovering corrupt slides, we can recover text from XML, similar to the way that we can do it with Word. Last tool here is the selection and visibility task pane. This is useful for inventorying items that are on a slide, checking the Z order for what should show in front of another object, and also determining if an object is on the slide itself or if it's on the master. So let's flip over to our demo. So here we have a presentation, fairly standard presentation. If I want to see all the masters that are available in this, if I click View and then go to Slide Master, this will list the top-level masters and also all the content masters that are available here. So this is the default set. What we typically see is multiple of the top-level masters. How that happens is users copying slides from other presentations into a new presentation and choosing the keep source formatting. So that every time you do that, you're adding a new master to the existing presentation. It can cause some instability, like we talked about. It can also cause file size bloat if there's large objects on those masters. So you can use this tool to come in and delete, clean them up. You can delete any unused masters. If you hover over these masters, it'll tell you exactly which slides these are used by. So you'll be able to tell, is the master in use? It'll say, slide training slide master used by no slides. Then you know it's safe to delete it. So recovering corrupt slides, if you have a presentation that will not open, in PowerPoint 2010, if you click the New Slide dropdown and then choose Reuse Slides, we can choose a presentation that's out on the file system somewhere and try to insert slides from that presentation. Sometimes we're able to insert slides from a presentation that's not able to be opened in PowerPoint, so it's a useful troubleshooting technique that way. We can also recover from XML the same way that we did with our Word document. So let me close out of PowerPoint. Make a copy, of course. I never work with original files. Rename that to zip. Drill in here, and PowerPoint's laid out a little bit differently because the application functions differently. But all my text for my slides is stored on within these different XML files. So here's our title. It can take a little bit of digging, but again, if you're in a disaster recovery scenario, a little bit of digging can sometimes save a lot of time. And the last tool I mentioned was the selection and visibility task pane. So let's get our presentation back open. I go to a slide that has a few objects on it. So if I click the select dropdown over on the right side of the home tab of the ribbon, we have a selection pane, and this will show me all of the objects that are on a given slide. From here, I can select any one of those objects. I can make them not visible, and I can also reorder. So rectangle 13, let's see here, what's this one? Autoshape 10 is on top of rectangle or Autoshape 13. So if I move this up the list using the Z order, it will move into the foreground. So it's a visual way to see Z order. So with that, thank you for attending the presentation. We have about 6 minutes left, so you can take some questions if anybody has any. Otherwise, the resources are listed up here. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my hats is help desk manager. And our biggest problem is with Word applications crashing. This is typically Office 2007 applications at the moment. And as everyone knows, you go to the event log and you look there for the problem, and it says Outlook has crashed, Word has crashed. So it really doesn't tell you anything. And So I'm here at the microphone with a plea to the developers to put something in the event logs that really tells us what the cause of the problem is.
Sure.
It would make my life so much easier.
Feedback noted. One thing that is sometimes useful as you look at those event 1000s in the event log is if the module, take a look at the module. If that module is something meaningful, sometimes that can help you solve the problem. Also, you can look at that module and make sure that you have the most up-to-date version of it. So if it's wwlib, make sure that you have the most up-to-date version. But yes, feedback, your feedback's appreciated. When you get those error events, please send us the error reports. That's what we use to determine who's hitting those type of problems. But thanks again. Other questions? All right, well, I'll be around for a few minutes if anybody wants to walk up to the podium. And thanks again for attending, and enjoy the rest of TechReady. TechEd.